Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger. Fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I've got a lot of faults. Many of you could be very good at listing all those out. I think one of the things, though, that I'm probably pretty good at is I'm just kind of self-aware. Like, I sort of know who I am. I sort of know what I'm a part of. And one of the things I have very much clarity about, one of the things I have total awareness of is that there is this, like, industrial, like media industrial complex built around Georgia football that I'm kind of a part of. Like, I do sort of get like what a crazy machine this must look like to people on the outside, whether they're entering into the fray of Georgia football or kind of living in that bubble. We always kind of talk about the bubble of Dog Nation. I can only imagine how weird all of this must seem. And one of the byproducts of that, and as I said before, I'm very much part of this, very guilty of contributing to this, is almost anybody on the most like flimsy evidence whatsoever can be hyped up to like the top of the mountain in like 2 seconds, because when there's so much coverage, when a show like this reaches as many people as it does, and we do it every single day, big microphone, big cameras, big everything else, every conversation just has a way of kind of feeling really, really big. And on very little evidence, sometimes we can turn for instance, potential graduate transfer quarterback into the next Eric Zier, the next Aaron Murray, or next, kind of all-time great Georgia quarterback, whichever one you kind of want to think of. So I do realize that's kind of like the awning that hangs over all of this, which is when we start talking about potential names as a replacement for Georgia at the quarterback position, there's just a way of kind of like hyping up these guys to the heavens on the basis of some fairly meager results. So totally understand that going in. However, when you think about at least one of the names that could be out there for Georgia, and it's probably important to note that there could still be multiples of names that Georgia's considering, but one that does seem to be out there is a former, we'll call him former Wake Forest quarterback Jamie Newman, because he's at least transferring somewhere, and a lot of Georgia fans do hope that's to UGA. And, you know, based on some stuff you may have seen at DogNation.com, some reporting that says this could be happening in terms of his college choice one way or another, sooner rather than later. So you keep your ear to the ground on that, eyes on where all this goes next. And I told you yesterday on the show that admittedly, I see a lot to like in Jamie Newman. Now, I'm going to try to be very careful and not use this to kind of like fan the flames of hysteria and tell you that Newman's going to come to Georgia and win the Heisman Trophy, if he does indeed come, that he's going to come here and be the greatest thing that Georgia's ever seen and lead Georgia to incredible heights. He might. He might do really well. But I'm going to be careful not to get the hype train too far out from the station when it comes to the potential that Newman could be a part of Georgia and what would still be a competition with other quarterbacks like Carson Beck, who Jeff Centella has written about this week, Dwan Mathis, who Mike Griffith has written about this week, Stetson Bennett, who kind of remains a little bit of a fan favorite because of the way in which he was talked about by Georgia players going back to his scout team work back in 2017. But when it comes to Newman, I do think there's some really interesting evidence there that even though that the overall statistical profile for him playing at Wake Forest was kind of about what you'd expect from a Wake Forest quarterback, some good, some bad, and whatever else, more good maybe at the beginning of the season, a little bit worse as the season progressed. Yet even within all of this, there is still this undeniable thread of commentary around him that, hold on, this is actually a pretty interesting prospect. And maybe, just maybe, this was a guy who was kind of playing in an outpost like Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and you take this particular prospect, all the raw materials and resources that Newman has at his disposal, you put him around a Georgia offense, if indeed he comes to UGA, and suddenly you're talking about a pretty interesting connection and combination all the way around. One of the things that leads me to want to say that is something that a guy named Chris Trapasso wrote for CBS Sports going back to November. Now, Trapasso is not a writer that I'm all that familiar with, but apparently he's a draft guy, and he was actually writing about Newman from the basis of if he were to declare for the NFL draft, because he would have been draft eligible this year. But when you see the overall description of what Trapasso says about Newman, you're left with a, ooh, could this guy be coming to Georgia? And if he does, what does that look like in a Georgia practice field? What would that look like on G-Day? And could this be the guy that eventually wins a UGA quarterback competition? Let me read you a couple sentences here. And if you're skeptical about Newman, I totally understand why. But if this doesn't get you at least a little bit more intrigued by what he might bring to the table, then I don't know what to tell you. Trapasso writing for CBS Sports about Newman, that he's 6'4", 230-pound draft-eligible quarterback of a 7-1 team in the Power 5 Conference. Obviously, Wake Forest did not finish 7-1. He goes on to say, but for some reason, he's garnering essentially no draft buzz. Until now, Wake Forest Jamie Newman has plus athleticism, which means he's more athletic than the average guy, decently strong arm, has made an assortment of some of the most high-level plays from inside the pocket of any quarterback in college football this season. Trapasso at CBS Sports goes on to say, actually, probably only Joe Burrow from LSU and maybe Oregon's Justin Herbert have made more retweet-worthy highlight reel throws from between the tackles this year. Trapasso, at least in terms of the quote I'm going to share with you, finishes by saying, as a redshirt junior, Newman does have another year of eligibility, but what he's done as a passer and a runner this season has put him inside my top 50 right now. So a top 50 prospect overall, according to a CBS Sports guy. Now, he's not going to the NFL draft. He's going to go somewhere else for his final year of college and maybe ends up being Georgia. And for me, that is a pretty interesting description of what a guy like Newman might bring to the table, and one of the reasons why I would get at least a little bit more excited about the idea that he could be inserted into a competition at Georgia to go along with some of the other names that I mentioned. We also had a member of our team, Michael Carvell, got a chance to catch up with Quincy Avery. Avery's a quarterback's coach who has worked with Newman and along with a number of other really big name quarterbacks over the years. He also kind of provided his description of what Newman brings to the table. Here's what quarterbacks coach Quincy Avery said about Jamie Newman.
He's 6'3", he's 225, he's an amazing athlete. So he can do so much in the run game and add to the run game and make it really difficult for people to, you know, stack the box and play defense against him. And then, make really difficult for people to play coverage and have an open box. And then he also has the ability to make every single throw on the football field. You look at his stats, and he was leading the country in, like, contested throws. And he didn't have the receivers to the level of a school like Georgia, but he was able to throw balls in tight spaces and complete them at a high clip. And then, of course, what he did in the run game was incredible.
So, listen, obviously the thing that's going to get most people's attention about Newman right away is the fact that he is a pretty good runner. I believe he had more than 500 yards rushing for Wake Forest this season. That's going to be the thing that gets the most attention because that's the thing that Georgia really hasn't had a lot of. I'm talking about going back years and years and years. However, the thing that Avery says there that probably gets my attention the most, admittedly, though, I do like the idea of the athleticism that Newman potentially brings to the table, but the thing that he says that gets my attention is that willingness to throw the ball into tight windows. That's a thing. That's a thing you've got to be able to do. Especially given the press coverage that you're going to face in the SEC, if that's indeed where Newman lands, that willingness to kind of put the ball at risk and that willingness to kind of make a risky throw, which, you know, no risk it, no biscuit, whatever, you know, corny phrase you want to use there. The willingness to do that, I think, goes a long way, too. So the overall bottom line for me is, you know, I realize it can be very easy to kind of hype up a Wake Forest quarterback and make him sound like, you know, an all-time great before he even makes his college decision. And at this point in time, who knows if he even chooses UGA, although there's certainly some chatter that he might. I do get all of that, and yet I think it's also important to note that there is potentially something here below the surface of a quarterback who was a part of a Demon Deacons offense that by the end of the season was kind of not really in the front page of a lot of college football websites or TV shows or anything like that. He's shown some athleticism, he's shown some moxie for the position, and he might be an interesting name. Now, I'll also say that he's not necessarily the only transfer name that I'm interested in. I think Chase Bryce from Clemson, if he were to indeed be aggressive and put his name out there, he's worth looking at too. And you can say what you want about the Boston College kid when he was healthy or the Texas Tech kid or whatever else. I haven't probably done as much work on them. So it's not only Newman for me that I'd be interested in, but there is something about Newman that keeps causing me to want to take that second and third look. Maybe Georgia fans feel the same way. One way or another, it certainly seems like there could be a path that Georgia's on here to find out sooner rather than later if it's going to add another quarterback into this competition. And that could set up a very fun conversation as the offseason rolls on. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Kroger. Good to have you with us. No matter how you get to us, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and as podcasts, wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad, as I said, to have you with us, and really appreciate Kroger making it all possible. And by the way, Kroger's got you covered for family fun night. You can enjoy the start of the new year with a cozy night in. And I know for my family, this sounds great, and I'm sure many of you would feel the same way. However, about classic games like Sorry or Jenga? I've tried to tell my kids how much fun Jenga is. I got to try to keep pushing them on that. Classic children's books, also 25% off. Much the same way the games are 25% off. Select movies like The Lorax or Maleficent. It's the witch movie. Is it Maleficent? Is that how you say this? Maleficent? Maybe I'm saying that wrong. Either way, it's a good movie. Angelina Jolie's in it. You can get a free bag of Twizzlers or 3-count Pop Secret to enjoy while you watch the movies at home. Let me try this movie one more time. Is it Maleficent? Is that how you say it? It's the Jolie movie. Y'all like it. Anyway, big savings at Kroger. You can find that at the Kroger close to you. Hope you'll go ahead and check all of that out. We got Jeff Sintel here coming up in just a moment. We'll talk to him. I'll get into some more of the Cade May stuff and like some of the, I think, ridiculous things that Attorney Tom Morris has said here coming up in just a few minutes, too. Let me do something else before we get there. Around the Doghouse, a movie that I do know how to pronounce the name of and a movie I really enjoy is the old basketball movie from the 80s called Hoosiers. And Gene Hackman plays the coach, Norman Dale. And there's one moment in particular in this movie that I've always really liked. You know, Dale's trying to like win over his new team and trying to sort of instill some discipline in them and get them to play the way that he wants them to play. And a guy fouls out of a game. There's only four players on the floor. You know the scene. I'm describing something you've probably seen a million times just like I have. And ref comes over and says, need one more. And Dale, the coach, played by Hackman, the actor, looks out on the court and says, my team's on the floor. And it's like this great moment of like the kind of coaches you kind of always want to grow up with, you know, kind of in control of the moment, cool, calm. And that's exactly the way that, you know, Hackman kind of plays this role in the movie, saying that I only want to play the players who are kind of bought into what we want to do. My team is on the floor. And I think there's a certain element of Georgia moving towards the 2020 season where me, as a person that obviously wants the best for UGA, I want to say, hey, my team, in other words, the team that I'm cheering for, my team's on the field. Whoever's here, whoever wants to be a part of this, those are the guys that I want. And I think that's really important to kind of remember and rally around when you hear some of the things you're going to hear during this offseason. Now, for the most part, we don't really criticize other people for their hot takes too much because we give a bunch of hot takes. Some of them are right, some of them wrong. That's just kind of the fun part of the offseason. Everybody's kind of throwing what they want to up on the against the wall to see if it sticks. And we all just kind of have a fun time with that. And some people keep score, some people don't. But it's just kind of the nature of the business. We've seen a guy from 24/7 Sports, for instance, pick Florida to go to the college football playoff in 2020. The vulnerability of Georgia opening the door for somebody else in the SEC East. Professional troll Danny Cannell was on Twitter recently this week saying you can book it that Florida's going to win the SEC East this season. And if you're a Georgia fan, I do think you're going to have to be prepared to endure a little bit of that this offseason. Now, for the most part, at least the Georgia fans that I come in contact with, whether it be in flesh and blood in real life, or whether it be the folks who interact with us here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, for the most part, people seem to be pretty good at knowing that this is all noise and it's all supposed to be blocked out. And much the same way coaches and players kind of do that kind of stuff, fans themselves do that. But there will probably be more of that this season, just given the fact that Georgia has a contested quarterback competition and you've got transfers leaving the program and whatever, you know, all kinds of questions being asked. It's going to open the door for just more hot takes about the demise, at least in terms of the 3-year dominance over the SEC East that Kirby Smart has had, the demise of that. However, but to go back and circle back to the whole Norman Dale Hoosiers thing, I think the Georgia fan can take some comfort in saying, my team's on the field. You may say that Florida's going to build itself up, or you may say that Tennessee, by virtue of the fact that it convinced Cade Mays to come back or whatever else, that shows that Georgia's not what it once was. But I think that you're going to start to see, amongst a lot of Georgia fans, a growing level of trust with the players this program does have. The guys who are either on defense coming back for one final run, or impressive young players who are looking to get their chance for a bigger spot on the stage. I think you're going to see a lot of confidence grow in Georgia fans, but the guys who are here, and there are unanswered questions, and we're not going to act like those things need to be glossed over. They need to be taken very seriously, especially when it comes to some of the shortcomings offensively. But let me give you one specific example defensively why it may not be quite as calamitous as some people have suggested that might be. You know, I got a chance to talk after the Sugar Bowl to Monty Rice, and I told some of you at the time that my feeling on Rice was very much like what it felt like talking to J.R. Reed after last year's Super Bowl. That was a losing day for Georgia. This was a winning effort for the Dogs on January 1st this year against Baylor. But the same way of hearing Reed speak a year ago, me saying, man, that's a leader that Georgia needs more of in 2019. Hopefully he comes back. I felt the same way talking to Rice after this year's Sugar Bowl. He just has kind of just grown in this role of, man, this is a really cool customer. And this is a guy that just feels, you know, all grown up compared to the young man I remember trying to choose between Georgia and LSU and I guess Auburn, you know, way back for the class of 2017. This is a young man that has just really, really grown up. And in terms of any would-be critics of the Dogs that are out there or any would-be doubters of the program that are out there, based on the conversation I had with Rice at the Sugar Bowl, here's what I believe that Monty would say to them.
I don't really listen to what people got to say because at the end of the day, they're not the one going out there practicing. They're not the one with two casts on their hand with a with injuries, you know, sprained wrist. It's not, you know, they're not out there banging with us. They just talking. So, I mean, they can talk all they want.
So, listen, you're going to take the SEC East crown from Georgia, something in its own for the last 3 years. You're going to take Georgia's spot kind of among the national elite away from it. You might be able to do it. But you're going to have to fight guys like Monty Rice to get that done. And folks, that is not going to be an easy thing for anybody to do. And Rice's influence and guys like Rice, their influence on this Georgia program is going to matter a lot in 2020. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is, as I said before, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. We'll have more on the Cade Mays situation coming up in a moment. But for now, though, the latest on UGA recruiting. Let's talk to Jeff Sintel.
And across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, let me say hello to Jeff Sintel here. And Jeff, we appreciate being a part of our program today. There is a lot of recruiting news that I want to get to here with you. I guess, you know, obviously we typically turn to you when it comes to what's going on with the 2020 class or really any future high school recruits. But you also see Georgia, at least seemingly right now, kind of casting its net in the direction of some transfer quarterbacks there as well. And there's all kinds of names out there, whether it be what seems to be a strong possibility of a guy like Jamie Newman, former Wake Forest quarterback, a possible deal with maybe assuming that he becomes a transfer quarterback, like a guy like Chase Bryce or the Texas Tech kid, the Boston College kid, whatever else. I guess let me start open-ended and we'll kind of whittle our way down from there. What do you make of the pursuit? Seems to be kind of full-fledged here for Georgia when it comes to transfer quarterbacks.
Yeah. Hey, good morning, everybody. First of all, I guess it's like we put up in a Dog Nation cover four item that's on the site right now is, you know, basically I think of that Herb Brooks to Russell line from Miracle, a great movie about the U.S. 1980 hockey team. You know, from great opportunities come great moments. And, you know, first of all, Brandon, I'd love to interact with you. If Jamie Newman becomes a Bulldog, do you think that counts towards the 2020 class and that push for the number one overall class? That's certainly better than adding a four-star cornerback, I might add, to the class.
Yeah, I don't really know, obviously, what the technicality on that would be, but in terms of how I would feel about the 2020 class, I'd feel pretty good about that. You and I have talked about this for years, Jeff. Whether it be Georgia who had one or one of Georgia's rivals who had one, I'm pretty consistent on this. I like players who've played before. And, you know, when Florida goes out and gets a running back from Miami, even if it's not a guy who's had huge stats as of yet, that's still a guy who's a little bit older, a little bit more physically mature, a guy who's got some experience, and that matters. And for Georgia who needs a quarterback, you better believe I'm going to feel that way even more. As much as you and I make a big deal, and certainly me with you makes a big deal about recruits and, you know, things of that nature, I think that transfers, because of their age, because of their experience, because of their physical maturity, I think they are incredibly valuable. And to the extent this sort of transfer portal thing continues to be the Wild West, the way that kind of has been the last couple of years, I think this time of year where the transfer portal is the most active and these teams who are the best at kind of working it to their benefit, I think that's a major college football story, and I think it's going to go a long way towards determining who plays the college football playoff, the national championship. I think transfers are a big part of the equation right now, as most of the quarterbacks in the college football playoff could attest.
So, yeah, Brandon, I think, you know, on this portal business, I mean, there is a sense of, I think, bigger, faster, stronger, understands the speed of the game, coming there to a program for straight business, which is to pad the professional resume and then trampoline yourself to a national title shot. You know, that's it's an overblown stat, but it's the truth right now. Of all those four quarterbacks that made the playoffs, three of them were portal players, and that's just part of the game now. And, you know, Brandon, I think with the graduate transfer and with quarterback, I think it kind of segues nicely into one of our resolutions here for Dog Nation, and that's more chortles for Brandon in 2020.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a recruiting win. It could be something as, you know, Georgia taking not one, but maybe two graduate transfer quarterbacks this cycle. It's things like that where it's a little bit surprising to where how Georgia can be what it was in 2019, and then maybe the reshaping of its offensive line with a little bit more mobile players, a potential dual-threat quarterback that can touch every part of the field with his deep ball and his out routes and his sideline routes. And you add that with new, shiny new weapons and toys coming in at wide receiver. And Brandon, it might not just be new and exciting here for Georgia fans. It also might mean more high-powered and more turbocharged. And I know lots of people, Brandon, our viewers, your viewers, our audience has clamored for, they want to have Georgia's quarterback to have that big, high-velocity arm. They want to see a more mobile quarterback. And, man, could the 2020 graduate transfer portal cycle, could that check off all those boxes for the 2020 roster? I think that's very fascinating.
Yeah, and I think it is, too. And something else you brought up is also really fascinating as well, and I admittedly wanted to ask you about this, the chance that Georgia could add an additional graduate transfer. And I know that comes across as greedy, which is very on brand for me, for the people who've watched and listened to our conversations for a long time. But you also know that that's essentially my solution to every problem in college football. Throw a bunch of bodies into a competition and kind of see how it all shakes out. Is there a chance that one of these guys, knowing their eligibility is precious, could be convinced to join another transfer quarterback in a competition where, admittedly, between, in this case, the two guys you would bring in going along with the current three guys you have on campus, at least one of those people is going to really get their feelings hurt. Is that too much to ask for Georgia to add not just one transfer quarterback, but a second transfer quarterback as well?
Yeah, so let's just take up, I think the Chase Bryce situation is a good way to start. I've known Chase Bryce. I remember him leading Grayson up and down the field with Mark Richt watching. Man, back in 2015, I think, when before Georgia's indoor practice field was done and the House of Pain was done, and he always had Georgia ties and Georgia connections to his family. There was always a strong affinity for the Georgia program. If memory serves, I can see Chase Bryce wanting to be a coach one day, not just an NFL quarterback. He's currently a backup at Clemson behind a number one overall future NFL pick in Trevor Lawrence. Clemson is bringing in the next big thing, the number one overall quarterback in 2020, and DJ Uiagalelei. He's already on campus as an early enrollee. That seems to think there's a clear succession plan there to get DJ ready behind Trevor. The other thing, folks, and I love this hopeful news about Dwan Mathis. I love it. You want the best for that young man, but you also have to look at Georgia's depth chart, quarterback room. We've written about Carson Beck. I feel he can certainly do the job, and he can handle it if it became his job. But, you know, Dwan Mathis, his health, it's not certain he's going to be cleared and ready for spring practice, and it's also not certain what happens once he gets into some live contact as well. Georgia, from a roster management standpoint, needs to make sure it has a lot of available quarterbacks ready to play. And I think it's really just smart thinking to try and see what Georgia can do in adding a lot of personnel to the 2020 quarterback room. Remember, Georgia was always chasing two incoming freshman quarterbacks in Carson Beck and C.J. Stroud late in the season in 2019 as well, because they just need more quarterbacks. And that was even with Jake Fromm coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, so since you opened the door on Chase Bryce, I'll walk through it here. We don't know yet that he's going to be a transfer quarterback, but it's largely speculated that he will be. And it sounds like, to listen to what you say there, that one of the things that Georgia could offer him if he were to join a guy like Newman, who, just because Newman's been playing, I would presume he'd be the point spread favorite to win that battle. But if Bryce came in addition to that, and you can correct my facts on this, I believe he has the extra year of eligibility still. And at Georgia, he could be, assuming that he were to beat out Beck and Mathis and Bennett, he could be the clear number two at Georgia, and maybe after that a starting quarterback, whereas at Clemson, given the presence of DJ Uiagalelei likely backing up Trevor Lawrence this year, that status at Clemson that he's enjoyed, he just may not have that in 2020. So even if Bryce were to transfer and not be a starter, is there a case to be made that Georgia could offer him something that Clemson couldn't?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we try to do there with that situation without, you know, running through with the door with a battering ram is just simply analyze whether a move like Georgia could be a good fit for Chase Brice. And it, to me, seems like with what's happening at Clemson and then what's potentially happening at Georgia, it seems like that makes a lot of sense. And, I mean, Brandon, I know you've already went down that road, at least in your inner Brandon Adams thought, but what would a quarterback room for Georgia look like? You know, when everybody's out there and they're watching the quarterbacks warm up, if Georgia went from Jake Fromm, Stetson Bennett, Nathan Priestley, Dwan Mathis in 2019 to potentially a Jamie Newman, a Chase Brice, a Carson Beck, a Dwan Mathis, man, the quarterback position would appear to me talent on the hoof, arm velocity, type of bodies and athletes in the room. And that would seem like a little bit like night and day to me.
And, yeah, I don't want to talk about quarterbacks the entire time, but there is something else I do want to ask you about quarterbacks because you've written about Carson Beck, and obviously Beck's a guy that made a lot of fans for himself during his high school career, high level of competition in the state of Florida, and some big numbers really throughout his career on that. You know, I've seen some of Dwan Mathis in a Georgia uniform now, and even though he hasn't been, you know, healthy to be a full contributor, he's kind of got a, at least, you know, post-spring, he's kind of got a coolness about him. I like the way that he looks in a uniform. I like the way that he throws the ball. When I've seen him run, I like what he does there. Bennett's got his own fans there as well. I guess handicap the possibility that even if Georgia were to bring in, and we'll even say sky's the limit here for a moment, although I guess it's probably slightly more likely that Georgia brings in one transfer than two, but let's say there are transfer quarterbacks in the mix, handicap the possibility that the starting quarterback for the month of September at least ends up being one of the guys currently on campus, back as the early enrollee, Mathis moving into his second year in the program, or Stetson Bennett, who seemingly has been here forever, although I guess also just going into his second year of kind of full work here.
Yeah, first of all, I don't know if I can accurately, I don't know if anybody can accurately calculate Dwan Mathis until they know he gets the clear bill of health.
But yeah.
The way I would apples to apples that is, to me, Carson Beck is an advanced high school prospect, the way he understands the game, and then you put his physical ability, his elite arm talent all the way around it. One of my favorite lines in that story, because I tried to get some scouting drip into that Carson Beck story and not just the personal side, was is that Carson Beck can throw a 50-yard ball in a game three different ways. That's like the 50-yarder that you have to run under. That's the 50-yarder where you layer it over a layer of coverage with some safeties. And then there's the one that travels 50 yards and maybe it doesn't go more than 10 feet off the ground and he just pipes that thing in there. That's really hard to do, that type of different ways for a long throw like that in a game. It's kind of like how Brandon can talk about three different ways he'd love to see a five-star or a dual-threat quarterback come into the Georgia program. But so I would think Beck, to me, seems more advanced. And I think, you know, I'm just going to say, I think he can do the job if he had to do the job. I think he can give Georgia some of the similar results, maybe just get there a different way than what Jake Fromm gave Georgia in 2017. But then you start adding these graduate transfers in the mix, and Brandon, those guys, frankly, are coming into play right away. And I would think if a talent like Jamie Newman, I think everybody's already seen the Pro Football Focus ratings about how well he threw into contested coverage and how well he threw into deep balls, and they even rated it, Pro Football Focus rated him the number three overall returning quarterback in college football behind Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields for the 2020 season. So there's a lot to like there about Newman, along with his legs. I think I'll add in one caveat that I didn't like the way his completion percentage dipped over his last five games of the year at Wake Forest. He had some good receivers at Wake Forest a year ago, and you saw in his last four or five ball games, he was only completing about 45 to 50% of his balls. That's something there to think about there with Jamie Newman as well. Chase Brice is going to be schooled in the Clemson offense. He's practiced against probably the best defense in college football over the last 3 years that he's been at Clemson year to year. And he's going to be game ready. He's going to have seen a lot of things. And remember that game that he saved a perfect season for Clemson when he came in and in relief of Trevor Lawrence. And that's a big boy element that, you know, not even a Carson Beck or not even a Dwan Mathis or even a Stetson Bennett can say when they're looking at their quarterback futures as well. Chase Brice has done it on a big stage with lots of stakes and lots of table stakes for a season on the table there for Clemson. So again, as we talk about it, Brandon, I keep flashing back to that picture. If Georgia can put a lot of these names on the field in 2020, it's going to look a lot, it's going to look like a demonstrably different quarterback room in the 2020 roster for Georgia, and that's going to open up a whole lot more possibilities for the offense in 2020.
You had some good reporting at DogNation.com on Broderick Jones' immediate plans when it comes to his official visits. He's obviously a UGA commit. Dogs get one of those official visits. Still plans to go to Auburn, and I guess they still get to bat last on all of this to the extent that that matters. But the new name here, and I thought this was kind of interesting, is the fact that he will go out to Fayetteville to see new coach Sam Pittman, a guy that he had a relationship dating back to his UGA commitment status with initially given to Pittman there at Arkansas. He'll take the official visit there. Does this change anything for Jones at all, the fact that he's going to Arkansas? Is this just a favor for a guy that he likes? Is this just a curiosity of, you know, seeing what it's like out at, you know, seemingly a long way away in Fayetteville? What do you make of the fact that Jones will alter his official visit plan a little bit and I guess go to Arkansas instead of going to Tennessee, if I've got that correct? What do you make of all of that?
Well, first of all, I guess it proves that not everybody related to the Georgia offensive line wants to go to Tennessee right now. you know, the first thing I'll say is I'll say something that maybe Brandon would hope I would say, is that Broderick Jones will take the visit to Arkansas and Sam Pittman will shoot a shot, but eventually he'll say, you need to go to Georgia. That's the best place for you. I think that's what Brandon, most of Dog Nation, and what you kind of think I hope happens here, you would hope happens here. I think the reality is I'm just going to say that, number one, Pittman is a great recruiter, man. We've seen it firsthand. I think these are two vivid examples with Cade Mays and even Isaiah Wilson and some of those guys and Solomon Kinley, how big Pittman was for Georgia, how he was able to bring in guys that seemingly the odds were stacked way against it. You know, Cade Mays from Tennessee, Xavier Truss from Rhode Island, Chad Lindbergh from Texas, Clay Webb from Alabama. So he's a great recruiter, but I do think he's going to shoot a shot. And the other thing in Pittman's arsenal is he's not going to be the offensive line coach there, which probably takes away a little bit of that pull because he's not going to be developing these guys every practice. But Brad Davis, who was at Missouri, who'd been at Florida for some time as well, he's a well-respected guy. That's why Sam Pittman tapped him to coach the offensive line. And he's filled, I think, with the Broderick Jones kind of moving pieces here. I think Georgia fans would feel a little bit more worried if a guy like Brad Davis was at Auburn, and that was the new Auburn offensive line coach.
Okay.
But I think the huge thing I'm going to keep coming back to here with Broderick is it's simply location. I think Georgia has been such a cozy and comfortable fit for him. He's still planning to make his official visit with Cedric Von Prawn Granger the weekend of the 24th. And to me, getting Jones and Granger there on the same weekend with Coach Matt Luke, I think it's the best possible timing for both young men to get them both together to continue to cement those bonds that they had from playing alongside each other and practicing alongside each other at the Under Armour All-American game. I think that's what's really important, along with the location. And there's a yin and yang with all this, Brandon. And don't think that what won't be mentioned to Broderick Jones right away now is that, hey, Cade Mays making that decision to go home to Rocky Top, that's going to help Tennessee.
Yeah.
But it's also going to help Georgia in the pursuit of Broderick Jones, because now they can certainly dangle that, hey, a left tackle or the right tackle job is certainly open in Georgia now. I think Jamari Sawyer can be an ideal right tackle for Georgia in the future, maybe even a Warren McClendon or a Xavier Truss there as well. But that left tackle spot, they don't have that premium athlete that's going to be charged with shadowing and mirroring and getting in the way of guys like Nolan Smith and Azeez Ojulari on other rosters coming off the edge. And I think that a playing time recipe for a playing time pot for Broderick Jones with the move here by Cade May certainly gets a lot sweeter for him to play and claim the starting job right away in Athens.
I'm trying to squeeze in two more before we're done. You mentioned Cedric a moment ago. I want to ask you about him before we finish up. But one more thing on Broderick Jones here. You know, I watched the video that y'all did with him at the Under Armour All-American game going back to the week of New Year's, and You know, I couldn't really quite tell, other than, as you said, location and being close to home for his family, get a chance to be around him and watch him play. I couldn't really tell what mattered to him beyond that, because the way that he spoke about, you know, Grimes or Porter at Auburn, the way that he spoke about Pittman, it was hard to really see much difference in that one way or another. He either doesn't have strong feelings or chooses to keep those close to his vest. I'm assuming that the fact that he could really step into Georgia pretty quickly in a tackle position, I'm guessing that would be really attractive to him. But once again, it's hard for me to know that one way for sure. Do you get a sense of how any, you know, the degree to which any of this matters to Jones?
So, number one, I think the most important thing here will be location. Let me see if I can kind of rate them in my mind's eye of how it sits. Location, location, location. The second thing is, I think the young man wants to place a little bit of subtlety or a little bit of drama around his recruitment. He just doesn't want to come out and say maybe what he's feeling. And I think this is, again, a case, Brandon, where the young man hadn't taken an official visit up to this point. The three he's going to take, he's not even going to take his five. He's going to go to Arkansas, Georgia, and Auburn. The third thing is, I think there's a relationship base that's built there with guys like Cedric Von Prong Granger, Chad Lindbergh, and Darnell Washington. Jones and Washington were almost at the hip every time Connor Riley and I saw those guys practicing or hanging out after practice or on social media. Those guys were always tight together. And to me, when Broderick Jones said the fact that the number one class and coming in with a bunch of guys that can win championships, he said that mattered to him. He said that was important to him. And again, that's the lure of what Georgia can still have, even without Sam Pittman, is it would be four-fifths of that offensive line that he had built to command and conquer at Georgia when he was still the offensive line coach at Georgia. If these guys all split up, if Broderick Jones goes his own way, he can't be a part of something that it seemed to me like he felt was pretty special coming down the track to that.
All right, let me do one final thing before we let you go. I know you've got an article coming up at DogNation.com taking a look at Cedric Von Prong Granger. I won't ask you to give the whole store away, but it sounds like he's got some visits coming up. How does that, if at all, impact Georgia's continued pursuit of him, or I guess attempt to kind of hold on to him, given the fact that he does have some visits upcoming?
Yeah, I'd love to, you know, maybe it's off-interview talk to get your thoughts on it, Brandon, but, you know, he's committed. He seems quite cozy with Georgia. My information leads me to believe he was a silent commitment to Georgia, maybe well in advance of when he actually went public with it last August. Cedric has not taken any official visits since the football season started way back in September. He's taken one to Oklahoma, and he's taken one to Texas A&M. Those are the only two official visits he's taken. He's got three left. I don't even know if he'll schedule all five. Florida's got one of those right now. Alabama is a contender. But, you know, it's one of those things where I understand how our audience is going to want constant updates about everything good, what's going on with Broderick, what's going on with Cedric Von Prong Granger. He's a guy that I think can come in and play right away at Georgia at guard or at center. Maybe it might give some flexibility as quickly as he gets the position down to maybe move Trey Hill around to maybe fill a hole in one of those other guard spots. I think with Granger, there's a lot of things, even more so than Broderick Jones, that lead me to believe that it would be highly unlikely for him to go anywhere else in Georgia.
So this is not a leading question. I'm honestly curious about this. I heard you mention a couple schools that he did take visits to. I heard you mention a couple schools that he might take visits to, but you didn't mention Georgia. Is it weird that he hasn't taken an official visit to Georgia, nor does he, at least based on my knowledge, have one plan yet?
Oh, yeah. Granger's going to Georgia. Like I said earlier, okay, in the Broderick Jones discussion, it's the 24th.
Okay, I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
The only one, Brandon. Yeah, Brandon, that was the only one he even had said in late December. That's been planned for forever. He set the Georgia official visit first for the weekend of the 24th. He's been to Georgia. That was his first, remembers that as his first big-time SEC offer. That was the first big-time college football game he went to on the first game of 2018 inside Sanford Stadium. He has a lot of family in the metro Atlanta area. He has more immediate family planning to move to the state of Georgia as well. There's just a lot of things besides just it being the best fit. I mean, Cedric Von Prong Granger is one of the most mature recruiting young men I've ever been around in covering the Georgia beat or in covering high school football in general. when he made that answer, when he gave that answer, he said, matter-of-factly, Brandon, he said, if this was a football decision, I'd be going to Alabama or LSU. And then he started comparing the economy of Atlanta, Georgia, compared to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, compared to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, or New Orleans, Louisiana. And he said there was no question the big dog or the alpha economy in terms of job growth, in terms of life after football, in terms of networking. He wants to be a graphic designer. He knew that his opportunities were much better playing in the state of Georgia and potentially making a living in the city of Atlanta compared to those two other alumni network bases for LSU and Alabama. That's a big boy answer. That's a smart, mature, young man answer. It's another one of the many reasons why Cedric Von Prime Granger stands out as the future leader of the Georgia class to me.
Sounds like a pretty smart man to me as well, Jeff. Really good stuff. Love the piece on Broderick Jones up at DogNation.com as we kind of further our information on what his process is going to be like. We'll look forward to reading a whole lot more from you. DogNation.com, the forum as well at forum.dognation.com. And, of course, we'll enjoy getting a chance to speak to you back here again on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger very soon.
Yeah, guys, and one more shameless plug for, don't shoot me on this, Brandon, the freshman who I feel is the most talented and athletic freshman on the Georgia campus, that's Matthew Bowling. Freshman Matthew Bowling has his first indoor track meet with the Georgia Bulldogs at men's and women's meet on Saturday in Athens, and that's the first time Matthew Bowling is going to suit up, going to do the long jump, he's going to run the 60 for the Georgia Bulldogs. That in itself is something we wanted to make sure we mentioned on the program.
That's a good tip, Jeff. I appreciate you sharing that. We'll look forward to talking to you soon. Hope you have a good weekend.
All right, guys. Take it easy.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
I'm actually glad that Jeff mentioned that. You know, one of the things we do every Friday on the show, we do our Kroger Kickoff, and it's our kind of preview of the weekend. And admittedly, what do you call them, like stick and ball sports? I'm a little bit more like... just well-versed on some of them from time to time. We usually give the Gym Dogs a shout-out there as well. But when it comes to some of the other stuff, you know, tennis, the track and field program at Georgia, even though they've had great success, swimming and diving, we're not always super, I guess, educated in what's going on with some of them. But now that Bowling's here doing his thing, I'm guessing we're going to have to do a little bit more of that. So we'll try to do our best to kind of keep fully up to date on everything going on with UGA Athletics as we kind of head into that fun time of year. I like the gym season when you're doing some indoor sports and doing some things like that. I like basketball. Georgia's got a big one coming up on Saturday. I just kind of like all of that. And so we'll cover that coming up in just a little bit. Before we go cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean, let me also mention this. Interesting that Jeff, a moment ago, started his conversation by mentioning Herb Brooks, the former coach of the 1980 U.S. men's hockey team. Back then, that's all the only hockey team America had, I guess. So a couple of 80s references today. Me, a more fictionalized version from Normandale and Hoosiers. Jeff, the very real Herb Brooks, who led the hockey team to the Miracle in Lake Placid there. So very 80s-themed show for us here today on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. So what do you want from us on that? As we go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean, let me remind you, it's a great time to celebrate a very, very bold vacation as the new year starts. And really one of the things that makes Royal Caribbean fun are the entertainment options you have on the ship, setting the standard, really, with dazzling full-scale productions, Broadway, Tony Award-winning musicals, ice skating shows, dive shows. The Oasis-class ships have the aqua theater shows, all kinds of night spots, sports bars, karaoke bars, just really fun, lots of live music. It's just an amazing entertainment, entire array of options on a Royal Caribbean cruise. So you need a vacation, get one. Reach out to your own travel advisor or do me a favor and contact our friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority. You can call them at 800-326-4971. That's 800-326-4971. Let them know you heard about them right here with us on Dog Nation Daily. So I've told you before, I love coaching rumors. We had the culmination of a wild series of rumors yesterday when former Washington State coach Mike Leach was brought to Starkville and introduced as the new coach of the Bulldogs. In fact, I think we have a little bit of the imagery from his arrival there. For those of you watching on video, you see him get off the plane quite awkwardly shaking a cowbell. For those of you watching on video, this has been a fun rumor to watch, and anytime Leach's name gets brought into this, it's going to be even more fun for a lot of the members of the media. I want to be totally clear about this, and I'm not trying to be a wet blanket for the people who kind of want, you know, Leach and want the circus sideshow that he brings with him. This is going to be an unmitigated disaster, a total, total failure, and Mississippi State will be left looking like a joke when it's all said and done. I saw where Stephen Godfrey from SB Nation said that one of the ways in which Mississippi State had kind of arrived on Leach is they had some technology that enabled them to measure the intensity of various names on social media, and Leach had high positives with many people, and that's one of the reasons why they went in that direction. This is another classic example of Twitter getting it wrong again. Because the thing that you see with Leach when he goes viral with a lot of his comments or all the crazy stuff that he says about zombies or whatever else, but the stuff that doesn't go quite as viral is when he shrugs his shoulders in Wazoo in Pullman and says, what do you want from me? I can't beat my in-state rival, the Washington Huskies, because they recruit better than me. Try that one time in the SEC and see how that goes. Let's not forget that Tennessee's old athletic director got fired for essentially having the temerity to reach in Leach's direction. I think that's the appropriate look at a guy who once sued his former employer. I think this is a joke of a hire, and I think it will leave Mississippi State eventually more embarrassed than it would have been if it just bit the bullet and hired Hugh Freeze. Now, someone we know is going to be a pretty good coach. I'll also say this, and I'll say it kind of quickly because I'm going long here. I think with Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, who I believe is a good offensive mind, although very much unproven as a head coach, Leach now at Mississippi State, who I'm going to be on record as saying will be a disaster, I think the door is open just a little bit more for Sam Pittman to have more success at Arkansas than I initially would have thought was possible. Because Pittman, even though he's a pretty big personality himself, is for the most part having a by-the-books, nuts-and-bolts approach to beginning his Arkansas career. He's hiring good assistants. He's trying to do sensible work on the recruiting trail. Even though he's got no experience, and I, for one, probably thought he'd never be a head coach, he actually looks a little bit more like a competent coach than Mike Leach, who I think will eventually shame Mississippi State, and Ole Miss, who's already shamed a number of former employers. I think the things going on in the Magnolia State, I think that actually opens the door for Pittman to eventually enjoy a little bit more success. A couple other stories real quick here. To give you an idea of why a guy like Leach works in Pullman, Washington, or Lubbock, Texas, and not necessarily in more of a pressure cooker of the SEC, just look at Bruce Feldman, who recently kind of put out a potential name to replace Leach at Washington State might be Jim McElwain. Now, McElwain, because of all the stuff that went on in Gainesville and some of the stuff accidentally that got attached to his name, including the shark photo, which was not McElwain, but McElwain kind of had a poor response to when it was brought up to him. You know, McElwain would essentially be unhireable almost anywhere else. He's just got a lot of baggage next to his name. But in a place like Pullman, Washington, which is way out in the middle of nowhere, yeah, why not? It probably works. So a place that could hire Jim McElwain can also tolerate Mike Leach. But what Starkville, Mississippi is about to find out is tolerating Leach in a more intense media environment, even in Starkville, that's going to be true compared to Pullman. It's not going to be quite as successful as I think they might think. A couple other things here. Tennessee did officially announce Cade Mays on its roster yesterday with a tweet and a picture there. So Mays is in the fold there in Knoxville. I have more on the Tom Mars thing in just a moment, but it did become official with Mays there in Knoxville yesterday. And then one final thing as part of our cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Am I wrong for saying this? And maybe y'all feel differently than I do. It seems like watching on TV and reading online, where the secondary ticket market is a blaze right now, there is incredible buzz for the national championship game if you're close to the LSU program, or if you're close to the Clemson program, or if you're close to Louisiana where it's being played. These are two great teams. I would have dreamed about watching them play really at any point in this year, but am I wrong for saying it doesn't feel like in our state, wherever I happen to live in Georgia, obviously, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of buzz for this national championship game right now. I'm always just really, really not a fan of these long layoffs for the game. And I think that's kind of seems to be hurting the national championship game right now. Maybe I'm wrong about that, because the get-in price in the Superdome is like $900. So clearly folks there are into the game. I just can't quite tell right now how much we're into the game. Game is Monday. We'll obviously talk about it then and make that cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. All right, let me say this just for a moment. And you know, obviously the Mays thing has been ridiculous. The fact that he's going to try to get immediate eligibility is ridiculous. I said this yesterday. The fact that his dad had part of his finger severed at Georgia seems to me, even though the details of that are like the wildest of all this, that to me seems to be the most cut and dry part of this whatsoever. The part of the Mays thing that's always aggravated me is, since the last couple of days since we've learned this, is the fact that they're going to try to make some sort of case for why Mays, who was a starter in good standing at Georgia at the end of the season, should have a hardship to be immediately eligible in Knoxville. And the guy at the center of all of this is attorney Tom Mars, who was also a big figure in the Justin Fields mess there as well. Drew Butler, former Georgia punter, had kind of sort of chided Mars online on Twitter about the fact that Mars had said that Georgia had intentionally leaked the details of the Mr. Mays lawsuit about the finger. And Tom Mars' response to Georgia saying they did not do that was, you know, totally childish and immature, a dog emoji, and I guess what is supposed to be a Pinocchio lying emoji, essentially saying in two emojis that that Georgia's lying about this. This coming from Dan Wolken on Twitter, who's also kind of a professional troll, at least when it comes to a UGA. Tom Mars texting that to him, apparently, according to Dan Wolken. So let me just say this about Tom Mars, because I know he's not a very popular figure with many Georgia fans. Attorneys like this will always be very popular with sports writers for three reasons. Reason number one is they are sources who are easily accessible. Reason number two is they kind of have the whiff of authority. Guy who works for the NCAA, guy who represents Cade Mays, just sort of feels like they have a little bit of authority. And they're also really willing to say outrageous, salacious things. That's a triple crown that makes these guys invaluable to, you know, people like Dan Wolken, who writes for USA Today. But for the average sports fan, I think they see right through this. And I think when they look at a guy like Mars and say, I want less of that in college football. I know that I do. And listen, I'm not going to say a bad word about Cade Mays and whatever, whatever, whatever. I used to be pretty open to the idea of transfer market and being a little bit more lenient with that. And when the whole notion of the transfer portal first came around, I guess I was kind of like, yeah, bring it on. Let these guys go be where they want to be. But when it opens the door for a guy like Tom Mars to have a bigger platform in college football, then I think there's no way that's a good thing. And so whatever has to be done to change the rules so I hear less about attorneys like him in instances like this, I'm all for whatever change has to be made for that. Let me do the Kroger kickoff on the way out the door here. Obviously, Kroger is a great way to get ready for the weekend. No matter what you have going on, Kroger can help you do that here this weekend. Also, some big things going on with UGA Athletics as well. Let me show you some of that. As Jeff mentioned, Matthew Bowling making his UGA track and field debut. We've also got the Gym Dogs getting going tonight against LSU. That is at Stegman Coliseum. Georgia basketball on the road tomorrow at Auburn. Lady Dogs at Tennessee. Tough game for them in Knoxville on Sunday. And then you've got eight former UGA golfers on the PGA Tour this weekend. Sony Open there in Honolulu. You get some primetime golf there for that, so worth checking out. Brendan Todd, some of those former UGA golfers giving it a go there in Hawaii this weekend. Boy, if there's one thing you want to learn about all of this, you've got young kids and they have aspirations towards athletics, put a golf club in their hand. Because watch some NFL playoffs this weekend. They're expecting so much snow in Green Bay, they have asked for volunteers in the state of Wisconsin to come over and help shovel the snow out of Lambeau Field. That's what a professional football player deals with this weekend. Professional golfers enjoy the sun and the warmth of Hawaii. You don't have to tell me which one I'd rather be a part of. So put a golf club in your kids' hands if they have athletic aspirations. If you've got aspirations of reminding that Florida fan in your life, though, what the real story is about how things are stacking up in the SEC East, remind them with our Gatorator Updater that it's been 1,168 days since the lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. Have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday.